නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. Dear Dhamma friends, we were discussing Dvedha Vitakka Sutta, two kinds of thought, so that we can apply this method also to calm down mental proliferation. So mental proliferation we recognized as one kind of method which actually leads to various difficulties and ultimately even leads to the quarrels, disputes, arguments, wars, etc. So therefore we were analyzing various kinds of suttas from which we can get some insights in order to calm down mental proliferation. So under that actually we discuss how mental proliferation starts with respect to the Madhupindika Sutta, and there it is very beautifully mentioned by the Buddha that even if one is able to calm down mental proliferation rather than entangled in them, rather than promoting them, if one is able to calm down them, that itself is capable of decaying, eliminating different kinds of defilements. Different kinds of latent tendencies can be eliminated by calming down mental proliferations. And then we discussed in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta how Buddha come up with some Chittanupassana techniques. Whenever a mind state arise, how to recognize that as a burden, as a heaviness, as some gross form, or how it is conditioned and how it is constructed. And after realizing that the nature, one can return back to the normal, simple, unentangled, spacious, equanimous state. So likewise, we understood different techniques Buddha mentioned, how to overcome mental proliferation, how to live in a more peaceful, calm, equanimous state. And then we discussed Sakkapansa Sutta, where another method is explained with respect to various different kinds of feelings. There Buddha advised God Sakka that different feelings are available, and some of them are better to associate, some of them should not associate. They have to be avoided. So the criterion given is that if any particular kind of feeling is leading to the development of wholesome states and the abandonment of the unwholesome state, then better you can associate that feeling. It could be a pleasurable feeling, it could be a painful feeling, and it could be even an equanimous feeling. And on the other hand, if there are feelings, once you are associating them, if it leads to the development of defilements, unwholesome states, and the decline of the wholesome states, then Buddha mentioned don't associate them. So therefore, different categories of feelings are available, and we can actually associate them if those associations are leading to the development of wholesome states. And when we are doing that sort of practice also, Buddha mentioned, slowly you may come to the level that you are only associating the feelings which are contributing towards the development of wholesome states, and later you are calming down thinking, calming down pondering, even when associating such thoughts, such feelings. So the mental proliferation now slowly become less and less, and ultimately necessary or useful feelings you may be associating with a calm mind, with a relaxed mind, with a mind free from inner chatter. And then we were discussing this Dvedha Vitakka Sutta. So it's a very beautiful sutta available in Majjhima Nikaya, where again Buddha discuss several other aspects of the mind, and he honestly sort of going through certain practices that he used during his own enlightenment, So before he become the Buddha, so he said, he mentioned here that he understood that I have to divide different types of thoughts into two categories. wholesome categories and the unwholesome category. Wholesome category has renunciative thoughts, thoughts of loving kindness, and then thoughts of non-cruelty. And those thoughts can be associated. And on the other hand, there are the opposite. Those are the sensual pleasure-related thoughts, and then the thoughts of ill will and thoughts of cruelty. And whenever different type of thoughts are arising, so Buddha try to recognize them. Either is it a wholesome thought or either is it an unwholesome thought. So this is a very distinct point here also available. So typically what happens is whenever thought arises, rather than doing this kind of categorization, what we do is immediately we claim it as mine and we get entangled in it. We are carried away by that, and we become a victim of that whole thinking process. But here, thought is looked at objectively. So rather than you identify with the thought, rather than you start to thinking in line with that thought, rather than you are promoting that thought, so you simply recognize thought as a thought. So this is simple chittanupassana. In the chittanupassana also Buddha mentioned, saragang va chittang saragang chittanti pajanati, vitaragang va chittang vitaragang chittanti pajanati. So here also Buddha mentioned that he recognized sensual desire as sensual desire, and renunciative thought as a renunciative thought. They are merely thoughts. They are not me, not mine, not myself. So understanding that very clearly is one important aspect of the Satipatthana, where rather than you look at them subjectively and get carried away by them, now you have a very profound perspective where you are looking at them objectively. And further Buddha mentioned, he used convincing the mind that if you are thinking along the unwholesome thoughts, that leads to your own infliction, your own affliction, affliction. Similarly, if you are going on thinking unwholesome thoughts, it may lead to the affliction of others, harm of others, and harm of both yourself and the others. And again Buddha mentioned, it obstructs wisdom, panya nirodhiko. So it obstructs wisdom. So you may have developed some amount of mindfulness, some amount of concentration, some amount of wisdom. So since you are thinking unwholesome thoughts, now that developed wholesome state start to vanish, go to decay, because you are going in the wrong direction. But on the other hand, if you are thinking the wholesome thoughts, there is no such harm. And further Buddha mentioned, if you are thinking unwholesome thoughts, then it causes difficulties, and again, most importantly, leads away from Nibbana. So we are trying to calm down the mind, to make the mind peaceful, to make the mind free from defilements. But now when we are thinking on the unwholesome thoughts, it is doing the opposite to the mind. It is going away from the Nibbana. So therefore Buddha mentioned that whenever a sensual desire arises, whenever say cruel thought arises, whenever ill will arises, so he has abandoned it, and he has removed it, and he tried to keep his mind away from them. Pajahameva vinodameva byantameva nang akasim. So whenever unwholesome thought happen, so he objectively look at it and not promoted it, not feed it, and simply keep it away, abandon it, remove it. And here Buddha give a very interesting finding that if you are thinking on the sensual thoughts, it will avoid renunciative thoughts and your mind will be inclined towards sensual desires. So your mind get occupied more and more with the sensual thoughts. Similarly, if you are thinking in line with the ill will thoughts, it will avoid any loving kindness thoughts, and your mind will be more inclined towards thoughts of ill will. Similarly, if you are thinking too much on the cruel thoughts, then the thoughts of compassion will be eliminated. Instead, your mind will be fully occupied with the thoughts of cruelty. So your character is determined by this kind of thought patterns. So what you are thinking is ultimately determine what is your character. And then Buddha give another very interesting simile here. Now, whenever you are guarding your mind against different types of unwholesome thoughts, so you have to be very vigilant. You have to keep an eye. Always you have to be diligent about what is going on in the mind. Because if you promote them, if you feed them, you will be in trouble and others also will be in trouble. Therefore, Buddha mentioned like during the end of the rainy season, during the autumn, when crops are thick, that you haven't yet taken the crop inside, rather still they are in the field. So now if a cowherd is bringing his cows to closer grassland, so he have to be very careful with the cows, because they can, rather than simply being in the grassland, so they probably can go to the paddy field. So they may destroy the paddy field as well. So then you will be in big trouble. The cowherd's task is to look after cows and avoid them going to the paddy fields so that they would destroy them. And if they destroy them, then the owners of the paddy fields will blame, harm, put you in trouble, and again the owner of the cows also will blame the cowherd. So likewise many problems will arise. So therefore, here Buddha mentioned that the cowherd is guarding his cows constantly, tapping and poking them on this side. And if there are ones who are going towards the paddy field, he uses the stick and curb them. So likewise Buddha mentioned, now the task is difficult because still the defilements are arising in the mind. Still the sensual desires, thoughts of ill will and the thoughts of cruelty are arising in the mind. And slowly when you are switching to the other side, and once you see that unwholesome thoughts are now calming down and they are abandoned, and more wholesome thoughts are now arising in the mind. And Buddha mentioned here, he understood akusalanam dhammanam adinavam okaram sankilesam. Whenever unwholesome thoughts are arising in the mind, that you are keeping them in the mind, so that starts to pollute the mind, that starts to defile the mind, and it leads to the danger or degradation of the mind. But on the other hand, the wholesome thoughts are more and more associated, it leads to cleansing, it leads to renunciation, it leads to the kind of positive side of the mind. It makes your mind cool, in other sense. Now, again, when you are thinking more onto the wholesome thoughts, it eliminates unwholesome thoughts. Say, if you are thinking to fairly on the renunciative thoughts, then more and more unwholesome sensual pleasure-related thoughts will be slowly faded away, and mind is occupied with renunciative thoughts. If you are thinking on the loving-kindness thoughts, then that will eliminate slowly thoughts of ill-will, and your mind is occupied with loving-kindness. If you are thinking on the thoughts of compassion, then it will eliminate the thoughts of cruelty, and you become a compassionate person. Now here, again Buddha give a simile, a little different from the previous one. Now the cowherd is watching the cows, but at this time all the crops were taken into the village. So now paddy fields are empty. They doesn't have the crops. Therefore even the cows go to the paddy fields, no harm. Therefore the task of the cowherd is easy. So he doesn't have to stressfully look at them. Rather, he can simply be aware, okay, cows are there, simple as that. So his task is very easy, and he can simply allow the cows to dwell as they like, move as they like. There is not much danger. And similarly, if you understand, okay, now the mind is fairly restrained, it is not thinking on the unwholesome thoughts, now it is tamed and trained to think wholesome thoughts. Therefore, there is no big harm now allowing the mind to think as it like. You simply do a relaxed observation. You are maintaining some mindfulness, but a relaxed mindfulness. So these are actually very practical points Buddha pointing out. Now, when your practice evolving, when your practice is developing, so you may reach this kind of state. And the beginning is a big struggle. Many defilements are there, many hindrances are there. So you have to be on guard. You have to use a lot of effort to maintain the mind in the wholesome side. But once your effort is successful and more mind is inclined towards thinking wholesome thoughts, then the task become less difficult, and you can peacefully allow the mind to operate, and you don't need to worry much because now it is fairly trained to think in the wholesome side. Now, another interesting point is here. Now, when your mind is more and more inclined towards wholesome thinking, and later actually it itself leading to more refinement. Now the positive atmosphere is more developed, your mind become more wholesome and more refined and more cleansed. So more the mind is cleansed, you may even understand these thoughts of or the wholesome thoughts. When it is thinking too much, when the mind is occupied with wholesome thoughts constantly, that itself has some sort of a burden, and you feel tired, you feel occupied, you feel burdened. So therefore Buddha mentioned at that time, so after recognizing that the burden of the even thinking the wholesome thoughts, now he calmed down them. Now he simply kept the mind closer to the body without thinking. Now this is the kaya anupassana, where you are simply keeping the mind without inner chatter, without any kind of noting, labeling, simply a quietened mind. Ajjattameva chittang santapemi, sannisademi, ekodin karomi, samadhami. Now internally, now your mind is peaceful. Internally it is very much anchored, and there are no agitation, there is no thinking, there is no inner chatter. Very calm, very quiet. Now this is the point that one can start, one can say the very good vipassana, because the now mind is very malleable, diligent, and can use for anything. Now this doesn't mean that you always, I mean, you can only start vipassana at this point, but this calming down process can happen gradually even within a session. Say for example, when you are sitting, at the beginning the nature of the mind is with say defilements, with hindrances, but with your practice it slowly, within, suppose I am giving an example, suppose within 15 minutes you are able to replace the unwholesome thoughts with wholesome thoughts. So instead of supporting ill will, now you started loving kindness practice, and that has taken the power, and now the thoughts of loving kindness are occupied in the mind. Now later you have to even calm down that. You are slowly subsiding even the loving kindness thoughts, and you are slowly keeping the mind, say, on the breath. So breath is a neutral object. It doesn't require any kind of thinking, any kind of thought. At the beginning, it is true that we are using maybe noting, labeling, in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath. So that sort of techniques are available. But later, when mind is fairly restrained, calm, say mindful, concentrated, then you have to stop that labeling, stop that noting, and keep the mind very quiet. So this is the point. This is the point. Now you are capable, or you have the capacity to turn towards vipassana, because your mind is fairly mindful, concentrated, unified, calm, free from inner chatter, and again very neutral. So whatever the observation that you are doing is quite unbiased, unattached, and you have that proper balance. So with that you can start the next practice. And there are Buddha mentioned different abhijna types are now available, possible if one likes. Say for example, if you are expecting to recognize different past lives, even that can be reflected. Even if you want to recognize how others are being born in hell realm and the god realms, even that may be chutupapata jnana also possible. And most importantly, if you want to recognize different defilements, different latent tendencies, influxes, that is also possible. Now, I am not going to touch on the Pubbe Nivasa Anusati and the Chutupapata. Those are more samatha-oriented parts. But I like to talk on to the Vipassana part, that is the recognizing different defilements and again different latent tendencies, influxes. So that is very, very important. Because once your mind start become stable, malleable, concentrated, free from inner chatter, mindful, so that mind, that state of mind can be used to recognize the true nature of things. Now we are using this concentrated mind to recognize different phenomena. Say you are keeping your attention on the body and you recognize, okay, there is a feeling, there is a painful feeling, there is a pleasurable feeling, there is an equanimous feeling. So you recognize feeling as feeling. Similarly, if there are any kind of sensations, you recognize them. Similarly, if there are, say, if you are looking at them in an angle with the elements, hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness, cohesion, fluidity, air, and cool, warm. So those kind of different element characteristics, that also possible. You are able to look at them objectively. You are able to look at them as different phenomena. And you can recognize distinct characteristics of them. More and more you observe like that, so you get an understanding. Okay, this is the way they are behaving. These are their individual characteristics. And these are how they come and go. This is how they arise and pass away. So more and more insights going to arise. And this actually happens through observation. So you can see from the previous practice, we are able to calm down thinking. We are able to calm down mental proliferation. We are able to calm down remove the mind from conditioning. Now you are going through some investigation. So this investigation is very, very neutral. And you are not bringing any kind of book knowledge here. Rather, you are going to have your own experiential knowledge. Slowly, you keep your attention and you are trying to recognize different phenomena. And the observation will give you different insights. And those insights are very direct insights. Those are not borrowed insights. Rather, you are gaining insights through your own observation, experiential knowledge. So that is very important. And at that time, suppose you understand how impermanent they are, how unsatisfactory these different phenomena. Either it may be bodily phenomena, it may be the vedana, feelings, or even different thoughts. And once you understand their impermanent nature, inconstant nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-governability, uncontrollability, slowly the mind starts to detach from them. Now you are not grasping them, now you are not rejecting them, and you are not ignorant about them, rather you start to more and more detached observer. So you can observe them, but with the detachment, you are not grasping them. So more and more you feel comfortable, you feel less burdened, your mind feel relaxed, because now less grasping. So why our mind become burdened? Why we start to suffer? So that is because of grasping. Either we grasp different forms, either we grasp different feelings, we grasp different perceptions, preconceived ideas, or we grasp even our own talents, different creative ideas, or different mental formations, maybe faith, loving kindness, say ill will, jealousy, we grasp them. So likewise, the grasping play a very significant role in the creation of suffering. And actually Buddha says, Panchupadana Khanda Dukkha. Whenever you grasp any sort of aggregate, it leads to suffering. So the mindfulness practice helps to create a space between the aggregate and the mind. Or we can say the aggregate and the watching mind, observing mind. So you have a detached observation now, and it has less grasping, and more you practice, more and more you feel relaxed, more and more you feel lighter, and more the sorrow, lamentation, those burdensome feelings going to become less and less. Now, as you are doing like this, so you start to recognize kind of a detached state of mind. How to keep the mind free from grasping? Not grasping at all. Without establishing mind at any place, at any phenomena. And to keep the mind free, unassociated, not clinging to anything in the world. So this is an outcome of the practice. So now if you are able to step into that level, it's a matter of maximizing it. So in other terms, what we are recognizing here is suffering and the cause of suffering and the freedom of suffering. And if you are able to recognize freedom of suffering, if you are able to recognize that equanimous, spacious, unattached, undefiled, pure, simple, calm, peaceful state of mind, now what is the path which is leading to such a state? So you may have understood the position, you may have understood the situation, but you can't maintain it. It is true that you are, because of your practice, time to time you come across this state of mind and you recognize that state and you are trying to appreciate it, because at the beginning you can't even appreciate it, because even that much our ego is there. But now with the practice it becomes less ego, and there is no self. So as a result, you need some amount of wisdom coming from the Buddha to even to appreciate that state. And with that wisdom, assume that you start to slowly recognize that state, give some value to that state, appreciate that state, and try to maintain your mind in that state, say 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, 60 minutes, likewise. So now it becomes kind of an experiential knowledge, and slowly you understand, okay, this is a kind of a refuge. I don't need to occupy mind with the unwholesome thoughts, because it is harmful to me, harmful to the others, bringing me away from the Nibbana. And similarly, I did occupy my mind with the wholesome thoughts. Later I understood them also as burden. That's why I kept them away. Now the mind is peaceful. But later I developed further insights with the Vipassana practice. Now it has given more strength to the mind to keep the mind free from defilements, free from grasping. And now mind is more pure, more cleansed, and you are able to understand even very subtle defilements and different tendencies in the mind, how mind is working, what are the different patterns available in the mind. Whenever suppose you are encountering some particular person, say why the mind is reacting like in a particular way. Say there is a person that you don't like to see, but at the very early morning all of a sudden you got to see him, but immediately your mind like shrinking, you feel uncomfortable, you feel little agitated. Why this person come in the early morning? And the whole day is going to ruin because of this person. Now that sort of attitude, that sort of preconceived ideas, different perceptions. So this is how mind is conditioned. So we are thinking in a particular pattern. So mind is very much like programmed, conditioned to think in a particular way. And on the other hand, suppose you like to see another person. So in the early morning, so you see him, maybe accidentally. And so once you see him, okay, you feel really positive, you feel really happy, you're delighted. So because you saw as the first sight this particular person. So this is again the way the mind is working. So our mind is conditioned to look at in that angle. So you have a preconceived idea. Okay, this person is a good person, this person is a, say, a likable person. So you really appreciate that presence of him. So your mind operates in that manner. Different tendencies. And when someone is talking, you have a different reaction. So you like to probably hear when he is talking. But on the other hand, when someone else is talking, you don't like to hear. You feel lethargic or you feel rejected. Your mind is not appreciating that talk. So these all are preconceived ideas. Different conditioning happened in the mind. It has happened through a long process, long time. But now if you are able to step back and carefully, honestly observe the mind, you can recognize these different conditioning available in the mind. Therefore, in the Asavakkhaya Jnana, in this sutta, the Dhavitakka Sutta, Buddha very interestingly mentioned about the Four Noble Truths, that you are understanding suffering as suffering. And when you understand suffering, it is not I am suffering, it is suffering. So you are able to recognize suffering as suffering. Say when there is a painful feeling, pain arises in the body. So typically what we have is I am suffering. Why poor me? I am suffering. I am going to suffer. The others are not suffering, but I am suffering. So this is the wrong perspective we have. But now with the practice, so you are looking at them objectively. So there is suffering, there is painful feeling. So this understanding is very, very crucial, very, very important. So when suffering is there, you are not recognizing it as me, mine, myself. Rather, there is suffering. So when more and more you are able to look at it, so the suffering reduces. So you do some sort of a detachment, you do some sort of a disengagement. Now you are able to let go of that suffering, you let go of that grasping. And if there is a desire, you let go of that. And similarly, suppose there is a pleasurable feeling, typically I want it, I want to have it, I want to possess it, I want to keep it. So this is the way that we typically think. Now, with the practice, now you are able to look at it. This is a pleasurable feeling. There is a pleasurable feeling. So that disengagement, detachment is happening. Now, no grasping. So the desire has reduced. So you have let go of the desire. So more and more you are able to let go of the desire, so you are dwelling in detachment. You are dwelling in more into the dispassion. You are not passionately grasping anything. Rather, you find your own, say, vantage point, own oasis, own refuge, freedom in the mind, which is free from any grasping. And you got to practice this more and more. Now, simple finding is not enough. Now, you more and more have to dwell in it. In the morning, you are trying to keep your mind there. While eating, you try to keep your mind there. While having your dinner, you are like to keep your mind there. Say, while walking, you are trying to keep your mind there. So, likewise, you have to train the mind. So, this is in a way the difficult part. So, people like to read and intellectually understand things, but they don't invest enough time to practice it. That's the problem. So you have to practically apply these teachings. How to dwell in these unattached, spacious, unconditioned state. And more you try to dwell there, then still you may understand, okay, why still mind is going into this particular direction? Why mind is thinking like this? Whenever I recognize that person, why again the mind become agitated? Or why I feel little, uneasy, little frustrated when I am encountering that particular person? Why is that? Or on the other hand, why mind get go and incline towards that person, trying to attach to that person, try to lustfully engage with that person? Why is that? So you are trying to understand this conditioning available in the mind. It's preconditioned. It's pre-programmed. So this is how we have to sort of recognize our own inner tendencies, latent tendencies. So therefore Buddha mentioned in the sutta, so you are recognizing asava, influxes, and the cause of influxes. So what are the causes more feeding these the asavas? So influxes are there, latent tendencies are there. What are the other causes, other factors which are more strengthening those tendencies? And how I can eliminate those tendencies? Suppose now you encounter a particular person and you have sort of previously you had a bad feeling about him. So whenever if you come across him, you get a little agitated, unrestful, dislike in the mind, but you understood it as a conditioned nature. But next time, when such conditioning happened in the mind, you are not promoting it, you are not feeding it, and you understand it as a suffering. So you are creating a self and you are applying various insights. And trying to keep the mind free from those defiled states. You are not promoting that latent tendency. So slowly, slowly you are unentangling the mind. Trying to keep the mind in the freedom. Not strengthening that latent tendency. So likewise Buddha mentioned how you may apply these techniques to the purification of the mind. And later, at the end of the sutta, Buddha gave a very interesting simile. And there was, suppose, because that in a wooded range, there was a great low-lying marsh near which a large herd of deer lived. Now, it's a very interesting simile Buddha is giving. That's a large herd of deers living in a closer to a low-lying marsh. And there is one person who is expecting the harm. Destruction of these deers. So what he did, he actually closed the safe path and he opened a false path. And these deers are going to the land in order to get their, say, food, and that's a safe path. But this cruel person, he crossed that path. Instead, he opened a wrong path, which is a harmful path. And even to lure deers, he kept a decoy. And he set a dummy deer also there, so that the deers may think it is not harmful. So they start to go in the wrong path and ultimately get into destruction. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned there's another person. Later he arises and he understood, okay, these deers are going in the wrong path and ultimately they are going to destruction. Let me close this wrong path. Let me open the safe path again. And he is destroying that decoy and the dummy. And now again the deers are going in the safe path. And again their growth is happening. And with that Buddha mentioned that he is giving a simile in order to convey a meaning. Here Buddha mentioned the great low-lying marsh is a term for sensual pleasures, to which actually everybody is going after. And the large herd of deer is a term for the worldly beings. And again, the person who are expecting harm, ruin, bondage, is the person called the evil one, that is the Mara. And the false path is the wrong path, that is the wrong view, wrong perceptions, wrong, say, thoughts, wrong words, wrong livelihood, wrong concentration. So that is the wrong path. And on the other hand, that decoy and the dummy are the greed and the delusion. And on the other hand, lust and the delusion, ignorance. And then the person who is expecting the growth of the people, growth of these deers. So that is the simile for the Buddha. And again, the safe path is the Noble Eightfold Path. So that is with the right view, that is with the right thinking, with right action, right livelihood, right concentration, right mindfulness, right etc. So that is the Noble Eightfold Path, correct path. And so the Buddha has destroyed the decoy and the dummy. Decoy is the lust, dummy is the ignorance. And now the deers are going in the correct path, right path. Worldly beings are practicing the right path. And now they are joyfully going to the correct direction. And Buddha has reopened the path, the correct path. So likewise, Buddha ultimately in this sutta very beautifully give a aesthetic aspect and beautifully mentioned that what is his task, how he has reopened the correct path so that the beings may travel in the safe path. And therefore, at the end, Buddha mentioned, what should be done for his disciples out of compassion by a teacher who seeks their welfare and has compassion for them? That I have done for you. Because there are these roots of trees, these empty huts. Meditate, bhikkhus. Do not delay or else you will regret it later. This is our instruction to you. So typically whenever Buddha give a very strong, very useful advice to the monks, so he reminds, out of compassion now I have shown the path, so don't delay, don't waste your time, don't regret later, now try to practice diligently. So with that I like to conclude today's sutta teaching. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you. So if we have any new friends that's joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you may also send them via chat. So Bhante, maybe we give folks a minute to think of their questions.
Sure, yeah.
So no question, good.
I have you done that one day. There's our first question. I'd like to invite Kanti to please ask your question.
Bhante, my name is Sam.
Yes.
The question I have is, you mentioned that constantly dealing with wholesome thoughts can be tiring.
Mm-hmm.
Something I found it difficult to understand because I have not experienced it. Maybe I have not developed enough wholesome thoughts, I guess, I don't know. What are you supposed to do if you get tired of thinking of wholesome thoughts?
Yeah, so that is the answer is actually Buddha given in this sutta. So he simply says, he keep the mind quiet. And at the early stage, he is using body as a refuge, as a anchor. And he is simply observing, keeping the mind quietly without having any thought. So this is difficult to understand, as you said at the beginning. Because how to keep the mind free from thinking? So this is something that we can't at the beginning understand. Say for example, you are practicing Anapanasati. So right. You are trying to keep your attention on in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath. So likewise you practice. Now at the beginning you may be even use a tool, naming, labeling. When you are experiencing in-breath, you name it as in. When you are experiencing out-breath, you are naming as out. So likewise you are practicing. Now slowly the other external thinking become less and less. Now you are less thinking about the world, less thinking about Afghanistan, less thinking about Australia, less thinking about Sri Lanka. So yeah, I mean slowly you eliminate those gross thinking, but you are trying to occupy your mind only with in out. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think I understand.
Yeah. So likewise.
So you're saying it's like a silent mind.
Yeah.
Keep your mind at the present moment, basically.
Yes. Yeah. So that is the technique we are using at the beginning to calm the mind, to eliminate those unnecessary thoughts, and to occupy the mind with the present moment. With the attention to the present moment phenomena. Now that is the breath, and in order to further enhance it, further say strengthen it, you are using the term in out, in out, in out. So likewise, so your mind has something to do, has something to anchor, that is the breath, and you are further strengthening it using in out. I mean when you are experiencing in breath, you are naming it as in. That is the vitakka.
Yes.
That is the vitakka. And when experiencing out-breath, you are naming it as out. Now later, slowly, you may come to a region that now breath is very subtle. Almost unperceivable. So at that time, still if you continue to say in, out, so that is a disturbance to the mind. So you got to feel it. You got to feel that it's a kind of a making kind of a jerk. Whenever you are murmuring or whenever you are labeling it as in, how about even not doing it? Simply doing the silent observation without any naming, without any noting. So this is where you reach the silent mind. So there is a process happens, that is a bodily process. But you don't need to have any thought. Rather, the mind is free from thinking, but you are experiencing, 100% experiencing, a present moment experience.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah.
Thank you. Tharvan Sarnai Bhante.
Yeah, Tharvan Sarnai.
Bhante, I have a quick question here. Bhante, where can I find this PDF book? Is it on the
Yeah, actually I am showing you the Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. This is the Majjhima Nikaya translation, middle length discourses by the Buddha. I mean, one option is you can purchase it. I mean, it's available. You can go to the Amazon and you can buy it if you are in overseas. And this is available in Sri Lanka. It's a very, very good translation by Bhikkhu Bodhi. Majjhima Nikaya translation by Bhikkhu Bodhi. And probably I can put this particular sutta to Nisarnavani web as well. Still, I didn't put it in. I hope Bhikkhu Bodhi may not be angry with me. Because this is actually shared with us. He actually shared with us. Otherwise, I mean, you have to purchase the book through, I mean, it's a wisdom publication. Yes.
Okay, thank you,
Bhante.
Next question, I'd like to invite Tita
Devi. Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, now the Buddha finishes up by saying, meditate because do not delay or that, or else you will regret it later. So, obviously, as lay people, we need to meditate. Obviously, we can't meditate for long hours. But we meditate as much as we can. We also do try to watch what we are doing to be mindful of all activities, or not all, but some of the activities at home. So that is also a form of meditation, I believe. So is that enough, Bhante?
Yeah, actually, it depends on, at the beginning, you need much meditation. Meditation in the sense, some formal meditation is very important at the beginning. That is why you are making a schedule. Maybe you are going to a retreat. So likewise, yes. Fair amount of dedication is required because the mind is full of defilements. Mind is full of, yes. Say, hindrances. But slowly, suppose you are going to, say, few retreats, and slowly you are able to calm down the mind, you are developing mindfulness, concentration, and now you are into the vipassana. So likewise, more and more you are developing mindfulness, now that many retreats may not be necessary. That many, that many dedication is not necessary because slowly you have the skill now. Your mind is not that defiled. It is very much like that... that cowherd doesn't have to look at too much, doesn't have to be always very steady of the cows, because now the thoughts are more into the wholesome side and more the mind is calm. So at that time you can little, relax your, say, practice, but it doesn't mean that you stop looking at the mind. So that has to be an ongoing process that you are now... have some hands-on experience, and therefore you can even continue watching the mind without being carried away by the thoughts. At the beginning you can't do that, but once you develop fair amount of mindfulness and clear comprehension, and now you can actually watch the mind. So this watching the mind is not limited to the cushion. So from the very moment that you wake up till you go to sleep, irrespective of where you are, you have to watch the mind. So that actually even allow you to go home, so engage with other activities. Say you are doing your daily course, so you are going to your working place. And at that time also you have to watch how mind is reacting. Now say for example, today I gave you a couple of examples that say when you encounter a particular person, say a different way of reaction is happening in the mind. So now that may happen during the working place, for example.
Yes.
So likewise, we need to honestly understand how mind is reacting to these different persons. So why is it happening? So, I mean, in order to know that, we can't simply be at home. I mean, at home also you may have some sort of things, but the real war front is maybe at the office, maybe while you are traveling, maybe dealing with different people. So there also we have to keep a guard, on guard of the mind, and we understand, okay, this is how mind is operating. While I am talking with this person, mind is operating like this. While I am talking with this person, mind is operating like this. So likewise, even though, I mean, externally they can't see it, internally we are doing some sort of a introspection. How mind is working while I am talking with this person? How mind is reacting? So what are the tendencies operating in my mind? So likewise, some inner ongoing scrutiny, observation is necessary. Yeah.
Yes, Bharti, I think I have done a fair amount of groundwork, but what you said about retreats and all that, Bharti. But I think for me, I find that, as you say, when you're sitting on the cushion, things are, there's no the obvious distraction.
Yes.
Once you get into a peaceful state, so we don't see all these very... sort of ill will and all the, well, not a whole lot, maybe an occasional one comes and goes.
Yeah.
And lustful thoughts and all don't come because we are sitting peacefully and feeling very peaceful, Bhante.
Yes, yes.
So I feel that practice for me, I find that it's more useful, as you say, when you do it in the real life.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And the other thing, Bhante, was that you said as we go into meditation, now you were speaking about meditation, and the mind becomes free, less attached, more peaceful, and less of the oneself. You said we see these subtle defilements.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I have seen those, Bhante. Have you to go into real deep? Have you to go into deep?
Not deep in the sense, deep, I mean, Bhante. No, thing is, more and more you... keep the mind free from mental proliferation, so more and more mind will start to enjoy or encounter inner silence.
Yes.
So at that time, so even the slightest defilement you may feel or you may recognize. Very much like a very simple simile we can give here. Say you have a dirty cloth. So it is dirt, there are dirt with the, say, many different ways. Now, even if you put a little bit of ink to it, it is not visible because it is extremely dirty. But on the other hand, if that cloth is washed and fully make it very much like a white cloth, then even a little drop of ink, it is clearly visible. So similarly, as we purify the mind, as we are continuing our practice, even a slightest defilement going to be visible. So it's not a, I mean, you may not have that skill immediately, but slowly as our mindfulness improves and the more and more we are dwelling in a more peaceful, calm, pure state of mind, so the slightest defilement make a jerk in the mind. So you may feel it kind of a gross defilement, but it is really a slight defilement, but we feel it strongly.
So it comes as a thought. Does it come as a thought?
Yes. As a thought? Yeah. I mean, mostly that is how, I mean, latent tendencies at their latent level you can't recognize.
Yes.
So they are hidden. But how they manifest? So the manifestation happened as a thought.
Yes, Bhante, but how does like the latent anusayas are like, say, how does the thought avijara is?
That's what I am telling.
An example?
Now, say, for example, now whenever you are thinking, oh, that person is a bad person. So that person is my enemy. So there avijja is available. So the very thought indicates fair amount of avijja. Because you have personified the whole thing. So you consider him as a person and there is I. So I am also a person. For me, he is a evil person. He is an enemy. So likewise, this whole thinking itself is rooted in avijja.
But as I told you, Bhante, when I go into this peaceful state, I just feel so light and very peaceful. I don't get these thoughts, but it comes in the real life, obviously, but not in these states.
Yes.
So that's why I ask you. Because those are very gross thoughts, no, Bhante?
Yes.
As Buddha says, olarika, so those don't come, shouldn't come when you are so peacefully.
Yeah, that's why now during your practice time, you are quite ready, you are on guard, and therefore there is no way for those thoughts to come out.
Yes.
So assume that you are while traveling, now you are driving on the highway.
Yeah.
Now you are in a more relaxed mood and you are looking here and there. Now mind has the freedom to freely behave. So at that time when a person cut off, so then you get angry.
Yes, of course.
That's the point. So, yeah. I mean, if now, why that anger happens? Because you have the tendency to become angry.
Yes, of course.
So, now you got to recognize, okay, this fellow again is now angry. While at home, while on the cushion, he was not angry. But now see, now again the fellow is angry. Now you honestly do that introspection. You honestly understand still anger is available in the mind.
Of course, Manji.
Yeah, so at that time, so at that time, rather than promoting it, so let it go.
Got it, Bhante. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Mahisha for the next question.
Bhante, I like to share some experience after my meditation for further advice from you. So, I actually started meditating. I started practicing since last December through Nisarganamaniya instructions. And it's going quite well, I feel like. If I say today's experience, so I do my walking for about 15 minutes because I have a problem in my foot, so I can't go longer under medical advice. So 15 minutes at a time, I do like 3 times a day, which is okay, but rather jumping here and there with mind is jumping here and there with some thoughts, but I'm quite, you know, getting it back soon. It's keep going and I'm not worried about that. So it's good. Sometimes think about something that someone told, like day to day, not, you know, past in the sense like long time ago, no, and not future. It's like day to day conversations in the house come to my mind and it goes off and I looked at it, okay, this is the thought came. So I recognize it. Once I recognize it, it's fading away. So it keeps on like that while I'm doing the walking practice. And sitting, I not necessarily do the walking before I sit, but sometimes I do. Walk for 15 minutes and then I go for the sitting. So sitting normally I like in the morning, first thing in the morning I wake up and then it goes for an hour, so it goes like this. So I start with my breath, and then soon I go to body sensations. And then I watch the sensations, and then I go to look at my thoughts. And then quickly I feel I'm getting into the samadhi, and then I let it happen as it goes. And then it goes to a state where I don't feel anything, and then come back again to thoughts, and then again to I'm fully, you know, conscious, and then I can hear and see this, I mean, hear the sounds, and again I go to the state of not feeling anything, no thoughts, and after some time, I can't exactly say how long that is, and then coming back to thoughts and coming back to again body sensations. And keeps that cycle going on and on and on until I finish my 1 hour. Now, I'm not worrying about anything over that. So that's what happened. Like I told you, the experience of today, so yesterday, day before yesterday. So that's how it happens. It's the patterns like that. So Yeah, so that's, so I thought I would share it with you and see whether I'm on the right track.
Yeah.
And day-to-day activities, I when I'm doing some work, housework, putting clothes for washing, I, you know, feel the touch of the clothes and then things like that. So when I'm putting the washing out, I feel the coldness of the clothes. So I'm on and off, you know, I feel it and then again a thought comes and goes. And also in case of, you know, day-to-day life, you know, things like if a neighbor says something or if someone says something, I always look at it, okay, all right, so the person is actually hanging on to that or something like that. I feel it. The person is too much, you know, having attached to that particular thing, issue. That's why the person is like kind of suffering and telling the story to me. And I analyze it in that perspective and feel like advising. And again, I'm thinking, no, I shouldn't, because that's the way that the person is looking at. And this is the way I'm looking at it. I shouldn't talk about that. So I keep more listening to what they say and then, you know, reaction. And sometimes I actually cannot say anything because I was not concentrating in the pattern that they concentrate, and then I lose words. So it keeps on going. And also, so when someone says something, I don't feel it like giving, you know, before I used to jump on it and then, you know, give opinions, give, you know, do like this, do like that, do like this, or they are not good, so things like that. I give my opinion, but I feel like I don't think they will understand when I talk in the way, because I'm looking at it in a different way. I think that what they feel, so something like that. So that's the way how the normal day goes. Sometimes I feel like it's a bit bored because no kind of entertainment now. So time to time I look at the Facebook and I feel like I'm going to, you know, cancel the Facebook page. And again, I think, no, at least once a day I look at it, and I kind of entertainment is there because I look at what happened, what's happening in Sri Lanka and what's happening to other friends or whatever. And don't feel like putting any comments or likes or anything, because I don't like certain things and I don't dislike either. So that's how the thing is going on, Bhante. So any advice? Thank you.
Yeah. So I think we simply have to leave the path for some more time, because things may not happen overnight. And as we discussed, the refinement of the mind happened very slowly. And the purification of the mind happened very slowly. And Buddha gave a very interesting simile here, and when one god, celestial being, come and ask how you cross the shore. So there Buddha mentioned, without struggling, without simply being idling. So he didn't struggle, but again he didn't idle, but continuing the path. So that's an interesting point that he is highlighting in the Ogatarana Sutta. So if we struggle too much, then we are holding things too strongly, we are grasping things too strongly, and we suffer. And because of that struggle, in the and the restlessness, agitation arise in the mind. And on the other hand, if we are not practicing the path, then we are idling. Then we again stuck in the situation, and we cannot come out of it. Therefore, the practice has to be a kind of a smooth, ongoing thing, and slowly we are going through it. So it may be every day finding the middle, I mean finding the balance. So every day it may change. Now suppose the middle that you found yesterday might be different the middle that you find today. So it's always a kind of a ongoing path. Every day you have to find out how can I keep my mind unagitated? How can I keep my mind unattached? So depending on the situation. So yesterday you may encounter some situation while at the, say, shopping mall. Today you may encounter situation while on the road. Tomorrow you may probably come across a situation while at home. Another day you come across a situation while at office. So likewise, every day is a new experience, and we have to go through it. We have to go through it and find out how to deal with it without making the mind unagitated, without making the mind agitated, and without keeping the defilements, without promoting defilements. So keeping some distant. So these are, I mean, practically we have to live and find out, and that is why it's shown as a path. So we have to travel in the path. So Noble Eightfold Path has to be lived, has to be practically experienced. So then it's a slow process. The purification may happen in the mind. And now I am telling you, I am also in the same path. So I am not an Arahant. So I also have defilements. So, but need to recognize them. So honestly, have to recognize where I go wrong, where I still I prepare some sort of conceit, where I am getting angry, where I am getting lustful. So those thoughts have to be objectively recognized and have to let go of. I mean, there is no any special instruction. It's a matter of continuing the path, and the development of the path itself will allow ourselves to understand more and more deeply and keep the mind more and more quiet, silent. So as you said, at these stages, suppose, I mean, not in the practice, but in our typical life, say we are quickly jump into conclusions, jump into decisions, quickly giving our ideas and trying to advise others. So that is how we have operated. But now we are not that trying to show off. We are not that immediately coming to conclusions. So we can observe the situation. We can have some balanced approach. So that indicates some improvement in ourselves.
Yes, thank you, Bhante. So
yeah.
in a sense, like you say, like keep going.
Yes,
that's it.
Yeah, exactly. So actually,
yeah,
while we are
instructions.
Yeah, actually, while we are continuing, more and more subtle defilements going to be visible. So at the early stages, only the gross defilements are visible, because we can't understand very subtle defilements. Subtle defilements are always there, but the gross defilements have taken the upper hand. But slowly the gross defilements are reducing. Say at the beginning, say for example, in the Chittanupassana level, Buddha starts with recognizing lustful thought as lustful thought. Say renunciative thoughts as renunciative thoughts. Then the ill-will thoughts as a ill-will thought. Say loving-kindness thought as a loving-kindness thought. So likewise, it's a gross level in a way. But later, in the Dhammanupassana, he again start with the hindrances. So those are the gross level. But slowly he is going to the refined levels. Now he is talking about the, say, different aggregates. He is talking about enlightenment factors, Four Noble Truths. So you can see, so there's a development, there's an evolvement happens. So with the evolvement, so those refined aspects going to be available, going to be understandable to ourselves.
Yeah, but the good thing that I like seeing or feeling is when a thought of a unwholesome thought comes, like in earlier days, we just, react to something and then say something to someone and all sorts of things. But now thoughts are coming, okay, this is not great. This is really unwholesome or unnecessary. I must tell something like that. It comes to the mind, but it's again like a huge brake comes up, like you put up a, brake in the car to stop it. Like,
yeah,
comes a brake and say, oh, hang on. Are you really getting to that mess, or are you like to stay in your peace? Something like that, a signal comes to the mind and then say, yep, let go.
Yeah.
And then figure it out, okay, no, I'm not going to put my hand because I'm disturbing my peace.
Mm-hmm.
It comes, and then once it comes, then I feel like, you used to say proud about something those
yeah.
days. So
yeah.
It's not like you're proud, I'm not telling anyone, but I... inside me, like I'm so happy that I took that step to not say that. I managed to look at that, and then it's dissolved by itself when I look at it. And then I feel so happy, not telling anyone, but I'm so happy. Is it okay to be happy like that? And
yeah.
then again, I feel like, oh, why you try to be happy? You have to be neutral, you know, that's what the Pant is saying. You have to pretend and be neutral about
no,
it.
No, no, thing is, I mean, neutral
then
here...
My mind says like that to me.
No, this happiness is not derived through sensual pleasures, no. Now, the happiness that we talk there is a happiness derived through sensual pleasures. Say, while you are looking at certain type of a sight, certain type of a form, say you become happy. So, that is a gross happiness. That is a happiness derived from sensual pleasures. So, that is what Buddha doesn't appreciate. So, that is a gross happiness. That is a conditioned happiness. And slow, you can eliminate and you can keep your mind quiet because you can't maintain that happiness for a long time. But here, it's a different. Here, you are deriving sort of happiness which is not really coming through the sensual gratification. Rather, mind is quiet, rather mind is peaceful. That peacefulness is making the mind happy.
Yes.
So that is an allowed happiness. So you know So Buddha mentioned Nibbanam Paramam Sukham. So it's also Nibbana is a sort of happiness. So I am not telling that we all are experiencing the utter form of Nibbana, but at least temporarily we are experiencing some sort of happiness, which is not type of a worldly type of happiness, which is not a Samisa Sukha. It's not a worldly gross sensual type of happiness, but rather it has come through letting go. So the happiness coming through letting go is something that Buddha appreciate, and it doesn't harm the mind, it doesn't disturb the mind, it doesn't agitate the mind. Say for example, you are going through some sensual happiness. You can't have sensual happiness without any agitation. Have you checked that?
Yes, true.
So mind become agitated, mind feel like burning, but still some gross happiness is available. So that is the nature of sensual desires, sensual form of happiness. But here the opposite. Here the mind is calm, quiet, even there is no thought at all, but you are happy. So, I mean, it is very difficult to, I mean, convince even people, but you experience it. Now you are telling it even. Now there is happiness, but it is even questionable how this happiness is coming. You know, I mean, you are not enjoying any sight, you are not enjoying any song or taste or touch or anything, but you are happy. So actually, in other terms, what we can say is that happiness is an inherent quality of the mind. Pabassaramidam bhikkave chittam tanchako agantukehi upakkilese upakkiritta. So Buddha mentioned, so the inherent nature of the mind is very vigilant, or how to say, pabassara. Pabassara is more glorious in a way. So we lost that inner happiness because of various defilements. So once those outer layer, outer sheath of those defilements are removed, what you have is a very pure happiness. So that is an inherent quality. You don't need to be afraid of it. And even Buddha mentioned, I mean, even before that Buddha mentioned, if you are able to derive any happiness through unworldly kind of niramisa piti, so you don't need to be worried about it. You don't need to be afraid of it. Because those happiness, those pleasures are not promoting any defilements. Say for example, if you refer Chula Vedala Sutta, Bhikkhuni Arahan Dhammadinna, she mentioned, now whenever you are enjoying sensual pleasures and you are going through some happiness derived through sensual pleasures, you are promoting raga anusaya. So that is the danger. So, and again, whenever you become angry and because of these sensual activities, suppose you come across some angry thoughts, you are promoting patiga anusaya, the latent tendency of the ill will. But in contrary, on the opposite, she mentioned, suppose that you are enjoying certain bliss coming through the unworldly type of happiness. Say you are going through some jhanic experience. Say you are enjoying some vipassana experience. So that is also blissful, that is also pleasurable. But she carefully mentioned there, you are not promoting any raga anusaya. You are not promoting any lustful tendency in the mind, because it is not derived through the sensual pleasures. So you don't need to be afraid of that.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Ditya to please ask the next question.
Tirun sir, hi. Sorry, also, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
So I want to ask a question regarding these latent tendencies. So are they totally destroyed at the time you go from, say, the Laukika to the Lokottara level, the moment you shift from those stages, or are they totally removed just by looking at them? That's the only question I have.
Yeah, actually, the only method to destroy them is, first of all, we need to look at them. We need to recognize them. Typically what happens is we don't even can recognize them. We simply follow them. We simply abide by them.
Yes,
we simply start to promote them. We start to feed them. So they become stronger and stronger. But the practice help us to look at them objectively. Now there is a desire. There is an anger. There is a jealousy. There is an ill will. So likewise, honestly, we are able to recognize different defilements once they come to the surface of the mind. Now we are not promoting them. Now we are not feeding them. Now we are not strengthening them. So as a result of that, a very slight amount, we are now diminishing that tendency, reducing that tendency. So slowly, now assume that the next time also they come up, but not to the same level. We are not,
yes.
So because we are not promoting it, we are not feeding it. So as a result of that, they may not arise to the same level, to the same intensity. Now it is coming to some less intensity, and very early stages that you can recognize them. So this process has to be continued. So that is why Buddha mentioned, talking about many defilements, he is telling, for example, lobho bhikkave na kaye na pahatabbo na vachaya. Panyaya diswa diswa pahatabba. Doso bhikkave na kaye na pahatabbo na vachaya. Panyaya diswa diswa pahatabba. Moho bhikkave na kaye na pahatabbo na vachaya. Panyaya diswa diswa pahatabba. So what he mentioned there is the greed, hatred, delusion. You can't simply eliminate just by the body or the words. You have to look at it through wisdom. You have to penetrate through wisdom. And through that, you can slowly decay it away. You can simply fade it away. So this watching it, properly recognizing it, observing them, and letting them go, not feeding them, allowing them to fade away. So this is the process has to happen. So when this is happening slowly, slowly, so we can say, once it is coming to a certain level, we can define, okay, he is now has come to a one level of attainment, or now he is a sotapanna. Suppose they are now further reduced, and at that level, okay, we can say, okay, now he has come to the sakadagami, once returner level. Now they are further reduced, and now one can say, okay, now he has come to the anagami, non-returner level, completely eliminated. Okay, he is now fully enlightened. So that is how we have to understood it.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we can take the last question maybe.
Yeah, okay, perfect. So I'd like to invite Indira to please ask the next question.
Yep. Now, we were saying that first we recognize the thought that the thought is with defilements, and then you look at it. And actually, Bhante, what I do is I realize it's like, say, when you are seated and, you know, your mind becomes very peaceful and all of a sudden a thought comes. And then he says, like, it's about a person that I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at it, I realize I have nothing to do with that person, but I just don't like it. Mm-hmm. Then I go into myself and see why I don't like the person. So then I realize that it is my own hina manya or atimanya or something like that. And is it by doing that, am I developing it? Or because when I realize it, it's easier for me to correct myself or release myself.
Yes,
like,
yes, yes. You are correct. Actually, here we are comparing ourselves with another person. So that very comparison is mana, conceit. So if we are able to understand that conceit, the comparison is because of this the mana measurement, what we do with myself is with respect to another person, then it has to be let go of. So that is why Buddha mentioned mana anuse. So I-making, mind-making and mana anuse, the conceit. So why we are comparing? So at that very comparison, we have some sort of ignorance. So I recognize this is myself, I am a person, and he is another person. So we have to compare now these two persons. So this is how we are constructing that. Now we get defiled. So if we are able to apply wisdom to avoid that comparison, to avoid making a person, a person here and person there. So then actually there is no way to arise. So that sort of mana, that sort of different thoughts propagating because of this comparison. But what I am telling is very, difficult in a way, because you know, we always tend to compare. So he is a bad person, he is a very good person, he is a very nice person. So we always compare. So this comparison is an ongoing, very subtle defilements, and this typically mentioned only in the fully enlightened stage that we make fully overrule it, remove it. But we can recognize some gross nature of this comparison and we can avoid it. We can become less and less conceited. So that Buddha really encouraged, and he mentioned that to live without conceit as much as possible, to live on the ground without going either high or to the low, just to be in the middle as much as possible without comparisons. Things may happen slowly. Even though I am telling to you, I am also not perfect, so I also compare, but slowly I need to understand. So still some ignorance is there. I am making a self here, I am making a self there. So then I do the comparison. So likewise, if we honestly understand our own ignorance, our own foolishness, then there's a possibility of reducing that comparison. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay, then thank you very much for all of your participation. So with that, we can conclude today's session, and we'll share the merits by reciting traditional verses. Ittavataja amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavataja amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavataja amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ ස සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බානපත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බානපත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බානපත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු
තෙරුවන්
සරණයි. යා
තෙරුවන්
සරණයි.
Thank you, Bante.
යා යා. තෙරුවන් සරණයි, Bante. යා තෙරුවන් සරණයි.